Thank you, Thomas. Actually, in fact, I hadn't heard John's talk, and I don't think he's just seen my view foils, but we're going to actually cover pretty much the same ground, but in an entirely different direction. So a number of these questions, your question about adjoint methods and so forth, will come up in the course of my presentation. What I'm going to start with is a question, and I'm going to end with not one question, but three or four more. So you'll perhaps think of this talk as a complete failure, but I hope I'll provoke some ideas and some thinking here. Let me begin then by just explaining the title. Is a nonlinear programming algorithm all you really need to solve an optimal control problem? Well, I have seen this kind of a question come up from a number of different arenas. I deal with a large community of engineers, and typically an engineer will spend a long time building up familiarity with his area of expertise. He'll build a simulation, like John was talking about, and he builds up a lot of faith in the model of the thing that he's simulating. And when he's all done with this complicated simulation, he says, oh, okay, now we need to optimize it. So all I need is a good optimization algorithm, and we'll wrap it around, and we're ready to go. So I see that view from a lot of engineering disciplines, not only the aerospace engineering arena, but others as well. The second time I've seen this kind of a question is out of a community more like this, where we have optimization algorithm experts, people who have been working on developing algorithms for perhaps many years. And they've built their favorite brand new interior point method or their SQP code, and they want to go prove that it's really good. So you look for test problems, and you grab the Qt test suite or whatever, and out of there, you look for some large problems, and lo and behold, they're derived from optimal control problems. So the conclusion in the NLP community is, well, yeah, I've built a really good code. That's the end of the day. We're done. So what I'd like to do is to see if, in fact, a good nonlinear programming algorithm is really all you need to do the job. And let's start out with kind of the state of affairs, as I see it anyway. Certainly there's a lot of good software available for solving a general nonlinear programming algorithm. And in fact, probably many of you have used at least a couple of algorithms. If not, I can tell you there are many out there and available. There's software that implements these methods. There's a lot of theory behind them. So people have worked in this arena for a long time. What does an NLP do? Well, it solves a problem like this. It says, I've got a set of variables, X, finite number of variables. I want to choose those variables to minimize a single quantity, a scalar objective function. And I want to satisfy some nonlinear algebraic constraints. So we've got a problem like that, and we've got lots of good tools to do the job to solve that problem. Okay, so that's part of the puzzle. Well, of course, the trouble is that what we really want to solve is not that problem. We want to solve an optimal control problem, a problem that looks like this. It says find a set of functions, U of t, that will do something like minimize an integral over a time domain, subject to a set of differential equation constraints and algebraic constraints. And along with the differential equations and the algebraic equations, there are perhaps some boundary conditions. Now, I've cast this here as a system of ODEs, ordinary differential equations, but of course, essentially everything I'm saying can be translated to the PDE, optimization arena. And in fact, many of the conclusions I'm going to come up with are really more relevant there, because what we're going to be leading into is solving good methods for solving optimal control problems in the ODE arena perhaps will lead us to a good way to solve systems defined by partial differential equations, which is where we are perhaps ultimately going to go. Okay, so what's the dilemma here? We've got good software to solve a problem with a finite set of variables and a finite set of functions, but what we want to do is solve a problem which in some sense is infinite. So how are we going to get the two pieces of the puzzle together? How do we actually formulate a nonlinear programming problem out of this infinite dimensional context and make the whole approach flow, make it work? Well, there's a lot of history. I mean, people have been trying to do this for certainly 30, 40 years, I can think of. And historically, one of the original approaches was what's called a shooting method. Basically, the idea of a shooting method is you say, well, gee, if I could integrate out the infinite dimensional problems, infinite dimensions of the problem, before I throw the problem across the fence to the optimizer, then I'd be back in business. And so what is a shooting method does? It attempts to say, let's integrate the differential equations or the differential algebraic equations, and then what we're left with is a simulation, a black box, if you will, and the only thing that's left undefined are a few finite boundary conditions. The boundary values become the finite set of quantities that the optimizer can play with. Okay, well, that's a very obvious approach. It's still used in some applications. What's the problem with this? Well, the dilemma is, of course, that when you do this, essentially you're kind of sweeping all the bad stuff under the rug. The boundary value problem can become very nonlinear. So where you might have had a fairly nicely behaved system of dynamics in the infinite dimensional domain, by integrating all of these things out, you may have in fact created a very nonlinear boundary value problem. So boundary value problems are not necessarily easier to solve, they may be harder than where you started. The second thing is that the process of integrating this system may be unstable numerically. So while we have very good numerical methods for solving differential equations, it doesn't necessarily mean it's easy. And in fact, oftentimes these problems are numerically difficult, numerically intractable. What's even more important here, or perhaps more interesting, is that if you think of this kind of an arena where we've got an inner simulation, a black box, wrapped around, or with an optimizer wrapped around it, what's happening is that the numerical solution of the differential equation, with all of its sophisticated error control, attempting to deal with the nonlinearities in the differential equations, has to do that at all the points that it's given to integrate. So this makes it very inefficient. This is why optimizing complicated black box simulations is expensive. It's why it takes, you know, perhaps 2 weeks. It's because we're looking at accurately solving a simulation at bad points. You really are only interested in solving the differential equations at the answer, not just every willy-nilly iterate that you come up with. Okay, but that's just the pain of the method. So you can perhaps live with it, perhaps not. But it is a downfall. A more severe one, and this is really what has prompted all the recent research, and this is kind of a showstopper, or can be a showstopper, is what happens if you have an inequality constraint over the domain? So instead of having an equality constraint up there, have an inequality constraint. Okay, handling an inequality constraint is cumbersome at least, and it may actually be impossible. So it can be intractable. Think about an upper bound, and you have to ride a bound at an unknown number of arcs. You don't know a priori where your inequality constraint is going to become active over the time domain, and therefore you don't know when to solve a DAE or when to solve an ODE. And you think about an optimal control problem like a bang-bang control, where you're rattling between constraints. This is where treatment of an inequality constraint becomes a showstopper. The last point that I kind of like to make, and this is one appealing to people who have written and nonlinear programming methods and are familiar with kind of the philosophy, is that in some sense a shooting method follows the same philosophy as a reduced gradient method in nonlinear programming. What does a reduced gradient method, a generalized reduced gradient method, do? It solves the constraints and follows a constraint surface to the solution. Well, that's exactly what's happening here when you use a shooting method. You're solving the differential equation constraint and following it to the solution. Okay, what did we learn 25 years ago about GRG methods in nonlinear programming? They work, they're still in use, but generally speaking, they have been replaced by sequential quadratic programming or interior point methods. Why is that? It's because the SQP and the interior point methods are more efficient. They don't waste time following the constraints at intermediate iterates. So, just like a GRG method has sort of fallen out of favor because it's inefficient, the same thing is holding true here. Shooting methods are, generally speaking, not as fast as some of the methods we're going to talk about here in a minute. Okay, what are these other new things? Well, they actually come out of the partial differential equation community, and I'm actually going to present and talk about them here as in the ODE context. But the idea is this. We talk about this, the dilemma of converting a problem with an infinite number of variables down to a finite set. What are you going to do? Well, you can discretize the problem. You can take your continuous functions, your y of t and u of t, and replace them by values that, in this case, just a set of time points. Now you've got infinite to finite in variables. Well, you can do the same thing to the differential equations. You can take that differential equation there and you can replace it by its trapezoidal discretization formula, or any other discretization formula for that matter. So what are we doing? We're going from the infinite domain to the finite domain. And if we work over in this arena, now we're back to a nonlinear programming problem, finite set of variables, some nonlinear constraints to solve, and we're ready to go. We've taken the big step where we can take our good software and we can look at our original infinite dimensional problem to solve, and hopefully we have a way to actually succeed and get an answer. Okay, I'm coming from Boeing, so I'm going to give you an aerodynamically motivated example. Actually, this is something that's sort of become a classic now. In fact, the very first kind of a problem similar to this was done by Roland Bulersch in Germany back in, I think he did his doctoral thesis in about 1970 on a problem like this. Basically, what it is, it's a problem that would be a reentry vehicle, such as a space shuttle or something coming back into an atmosphere. And the kind of an application, actually this is to scale, the kind of an application we're talking about here, the vehicle up at this end of the trajectory here is perhaps going 25,000 feet per second, and in about a half an hour, it ends up at the end of the trajectory here, going about 2,500 feet per second. So this is all hypersonic velocity. I'm showing on there the cross range. Well, a kind of a scenario you could imagine happening would be, suppose we're up in the shuttle, and for some reason we need to get down to the ground. But in fact, we're not over the landing site that we want to be on. If we're over the landing site, we could just follow this green line here. We just come straight in. Well, we got an emergency. The power is out, whatever. So you need to get down right now, and you need to do that as quickly as possible, but the landing site is 2,000 miles away. And literally, that's the scale here. Cross range here, where I've got that white arrow, is about 2,000 nautical miles. So that's like the distance between Toronto and Seattle. In other words, you decided you're going to go to Seattle, but whoops, at the last minute, we got to make a left turn. We're going to divert to Toronto. Okay, this is the kind of a situation we're in. And it's a real problem. It's a problem that has equations of motion that describe the dynamics of this vehicle. The control variables in this case, the vector U, is the angle of attack and the bank angle of the vehicle. So as a pilot of this vehicle, you want to steer the thing such that you get as far off to the left of where you're going as possible, but you also have some other things. You want to keep the vehicle such that it doesn't burn up. You've got constraints that impose heating limits on the thermal system. Okay. It's a pretty classical problem that people have been looking at. This, it turns out to be a fairly nasty boundary value problem of real importance. Well, what if we took this problem and did a simple numerical experiment? Now, I've laid out a way to convert that infinite dimensional problem to a finite dimensional one. So I'm going to say, well, okay, let's use that trapezoidal discretization formula that I had on the earlier chart, and I'll use 50 grid points to discretize that trajectory. And then I'm going to just go ahead and solve that problem using whatever NLP you like. Pick your favorite. Call the solution U hat, because that's going to be good enough. But then what we're going to do is we're going to take that approximate solution, if you will, feed it back into the differential equations, the truth model, numerically integrate the trajectory. So in other words, this is like saying, well, I know approximately what the steering is going to be. Let's go fly it in the vehicle and see what happens. Okay, this is the kind of a judgment that an engineer would make. You'd say, well, gee, yeah, that looks like pretty much the right steering. Let's just use it. Well, what happens? Here's what happens. What we've got plotted here are percentage errors in the relevant state variables. So, for example, we start out in the altitude, and when we get to the end, we're 15% off. When we get to the end of the trajectory here, the velocity is off by nearly 15%. The altitude should be about 80,000 feet at the end of the trajectory. It's in fact 93,000 when you integrate the real trajectory dynamics. The velocity is not 2,500 feet per second. We're going, 400 feet per second faster. That's like 400 miles faster than we expected. The flight path angle, this is a pretty critical one. It says the direction that we're going. Instead of being 5 degrees down, we're going nearly twice as fast. So that means the thing is coming in a whole lot faster than you thought. Well, that's not good news, but this is really bad. This says that the heating limit that we were trying to keep imposed on that trajectory in order to keep it from burning up has been violated. That makes the pilots really unhappy. Okay, what are we going to do about it? Well, the first conclusion is this. My opening statement, I hope I've shown you that you need more than just a good nonlinear programming problem to solve an optimal control. You've got to deal with the discretization error. Blindly threw out here, I said, I'm going to use 50 grid points and a trapezoidal method. Why is that right? Could be wrong. In fact, it is wrong. So, you cannot just pick up your favorite software package, apply it to your favorite optimal control problem, and hope to get the right answer. You've got to think about how accurate is the solution? Okay. If you accept that, then what we've done is we've discredited the answer to my opening or my title slide is no. You must look at more than just a nonlinear programming problem to get an answer. Okay, so what could we do? Well, there's lots of methods out there now that try to deal with this. And here's kind of a prototype scheme. It's what we kind of use in our software, but the basic idea is this. We have to convert the infinite dimensional problem. We transcribe the infinite dimensional problem, the control problem, to a finite dimensional one by discretization. That was the step I took. I used 50 grid points and trapezoidal. There are other methods. That's step number one. I then wound up with a nonlinear programming problem, and in this case, I solved it. At the end of the solution of the NLP, in our little demonstration there, I quit right here. I didn't look at the discretization error. What I'm really telling you is you do need to pay attention to step three, which is to decide whether the solution you have obtained is, in fact, a good approximation to the continuous one. If it is a good approximation, then you're done. If it isn't, you're going to have to repeat this. Okay, so what I've really described then is a sequential nonlinear programming algorithm. We're going to do a sequence of nonlinear programs, and now we're faced with a whole host of other questions. Not necessarily is the discretization accuracy important, but how do we do this efficiently? And are there, I just blindly said, well, gee, there's a nonlinear programming algorithm that's needed here. Is an SQP method good? Is an interior point method good? Is it something else? So we now are looking at, in this context of sequential nonlinear programming, what's the best method to choose? And how do we exploit some of the properties of this application to make it efficient and accurate? Okay, well, some obvious things that kind of show up right up front here is that we start out, the way I've described this, with a coarse grid, solve the NLP, and then that leads us to trying to do a problem typically with more grid points, because as you add grid points, you refine the accuracy of the solution. So what we can think is that the problem is going to get, we're going to get more information at least. So we would expect that we should be able to exploit information about the coarse grid solution to make the fine grid one work better. But by the same token, as we increase the grid size, the size of the underlying nonlinear programming problem is going to become larger and therefore more difficult, or at least more computationally intensive to solve. So now what we're interested in is the question of how do we efficiently solve a sequence of nonlinear programs? And of course, again, an obvious answer here is to use information about the coarse grid to hot start, if you will, to make the subsequent NLPs easier, faster, more robust, perhaps. So now this brings up a series of issues that I'm throwing it out here because I'm going to lead to some conflicting conclusions. The variables themselves. If we've got a coarse grid solution and we've done a discretization on that solution, we should be able to get some pretty good estimates of the real variables, the control variables and the state variables. If we're using a collocation polynomial here, we can interpolate, get very good estimates for putting a variable halfway between two neighboring grid points. So we'll get very good estimates of the real variables. That helps an SQP method. It says, you're going to give it a good estimate, and you would expect then as the size of this problem grows that an SQP method is going to benefit because it's going to have good estimates for the real variables. Okay, In contrast, if we use an interior point method, well, an interior point algorithm has this ugly thing that's called feasibility. The initial guess for an interior point method must also be feasible. So there's an issue that I believe is standing out there to be resolved, namely, how do you warm start or hot start an interior point algorithm? How do I make use of a good initial guess in this context? Most certainly our interior point algorithm, and perhaps others that I've seen, take the user's input guess and perturb it to make it feasible, which means that you've lost all of this consistency from your underlying collocation method. All of the information in your discretization has sort of been destroyed by your nonlinear programming code, in this case an interior point code. So what the first thing is, our small coarse grid to large grid problem may actually not be a good guess for an interior point method. Well, that's sort of disheartening. In fact, especially was disheartening to us because we spent a couple of years writing an interior point code that I'll show you some results for. Same thing holds true for the adjoint variables or the dual variables. For an SQP method, what we do is we use essentially a cold start strategy. We construct estimates of the Lagrange multipliers, which are related to the adjoint variables, by essentially using an a first order estimate. So we assume that the underlying Hessian matrix is an identity and solve get a good estimate for the an estimate for the Lagrange multipliers. This then in turn means that we get a reasonably decent start for an SQP algorithm. Now, I've got a little kind of comments up here in fine print. There are some unresolved issues here, and this is an area of open research, namely, do the nonlinear programming Lagrange multipliers converge to the adjoint variables? And it isn't clear that they do. Depends on your choice of discretization. There may not be any correlation at all, and in fact, there's some indication that you may get convergence of the discrete problem, which implies convergence of the continuous problem, but not in the same way. So there's a whole host of theoretical issues here. Nevertheless, I still kind of hold out some hope that we may be able to draw a parallel between the continuous adjoint variables and the discrete Lagrange multipliers and exploit that information to get a good guess. Regardless of that, for an SQP algorithm, that isn't too terribly critical. However, what is critical here is that as the size of the grid grows, think about you start out with 50 grid points and now you go to 100. Well, if you had inequality constraints along the way, now you've got an active set problem to determine, to deal with. And an SQP method is an active set method, so you're going to have to add and delete constraints at every little time grid point in an SQP algorithm. So you would expect that an SQP algorithm would have to deal with that and would suffer in the presence of lots of inequalities. Nevertheless, that's kind of the state of affairs. We would have hoped, in fact, that that problem would have gone away. In other words, we would have expected if I had used an interior point algorithm, there is no such thing as an active set there, or at least it doesn't have the same meaning. So you would expect that if I had been using an interior point algorithm, the active set issue wouldn't be a factor. So that would be a positive thing to be said for using an interior point algorithm. On the other hand, just like for the primal variables, if we're going to use an interior point method, the dual variables have to be dual feasible to get started. So any estimate that we come up with based on our co-location scheme is going to be perturbed by the interior point algorithm, and so we're going to turn a good guess into a bad guess of the adjoint variables. So that's a con, if you will. Okay? What about the linear algebra? This is usually the dominant cost in these methods. You would expect for an SQP algorithm that, first of all, if you're going to even use an active set method and you're going to try to combine it with iterative linear algebra, you've got a big problem. So you're almost forced here to think about using direct factorizations if you're going to use an SQP active set strategy. Because in the context of an active set method, adding and deleting and solving the resulting KKT system with a preconditioned conjugate gradient method is going to be cost prohibitive. What about the interior point method? Well, the interior point method should not have that problem. So it should, in fact, look really good for large problems because it doesn't have to deal with an active set issue. It can use an iterative method. And in fact, you would expect that you could come up with good preconditioners by looking at the coarse-defined grid behavior. So this is really an appealing feature of an interior point method. Okay? So now we've laid out, we've got some pros and cons of each of these, and how do they all kind of fit together? Well, let's get back to our reentry problem and see what we found. The top table here is the behavior of that algorithm I described to you when we're making the nonlinear program an SQP, a sparse SQP. So we're using a sure complement sparse quadratic programming algorithm to do the inner loop of the optimal control method. And line number one up there says we started out with 50 grid points. The number of gradients was 27 to solve the problem. It's a full second order method, so it's using 18 Hessians to solve it. Took 901 function evaluations. That's doing finite difference Jacobian and Hessian calculations. And when we're done with that, the discretization error was 8 times 10 to the minus 1, and it took 3 seconds on my Sun workstation. So that's pretty good. The coarse grid solution was then used to get a good guess for line number 2, which is the first mesh refinement. So we went from 50 grid points to 66 grid points. And that was used, again, as an initial guess. It solved that problem in another 2 seconds. The discretization error went down by about an order of magnitude from down to 8 times 10 to the minus 2. And what you see here is that we did that repeatedly. Actually, at step number 3, we switched from a trapezoidal discretization to a higher order, Hermite-Simpson, which is a fourth order discretization. And ultimately, what we're doing here is 10 mesh refinement steps to solve that reentry problem that I showed you. Now, the thing to notice here is what we expected. As the problem gets larger, we're getting better and better initial guesses. The number of Hessian evaluations is going down. So, in fact, down near the end here, we're getting very good guesses, and we're literally getting convergence of the largest nonlinear programs in 1 or 2 steps. So that's good news. That's exactly what you'd like to see happen. By contrast, we use the exact same problem, and this is using our primal dual barrier method. Okay. Here what we see is that we solved the problem in 6 mesh refinements, and the really tall tentpole that you notice here is as the problems get larger, the number of Hessian evaluations is not going down. Again, it's because of this fact that We are not able to exploit good initial guesses. We have to keep perturbing the problem. So in effect, each one of these problems is just as hard as the previous one, and we can't exploit the fact that we're getting closer and closer to the answer because of the fact that the interior point method requires a feasible initial iterate. So that's bad news. There's something else here to think about. So like I said here, the expected behavior from those charts. As the problem becomes larger, the SQP method becomes more efficient because it's using the good initial guess. That's what we hoped for. The barrier method doesn't exploit a good guess, so it doesn't see that benefit. Now, what I didn't point out, and I will now point out, is something here. I said we're solving the same sequence of nonlinear programs. Well, why does the number of mesh refinements differ from that case to this case? I led you to believe that the nonlinear programs were interchangeable, right? Why not? Why is one taking more than the other? We're solving each of them to the same accuracy, supposed to get the same answer. The mesh refinement procedure was the same, so what's going on? Well, if you look at the very first solution, that 50 grid solution, what do we find? We find that these are nonlinear optimization problems. The SQP method solved, and here's the final state for the SQP solution. The second column, we see the barrier solution. So it obtained a different local minimum. Two different algorithms solving the same problem from the same starting point reached two different solutions. Well, in the context of this mesh refinement, then, that led us down a different path. It meant that, in fact, the barrier method only took 6 mesh refinements, even though it took longer CPU time to solve. The SQP method actually solved the problem faster, but it took more mesh refinement iterations to solve the problem. So what we really have here is another can of worms, that these are nonlinear problems. Nonlinear problems have local solutions. Depending on how you do the grid refinement, you may get different local solutions. So you need to worry about that. Think about that. Yes, all based on the same, in fact, our grid refinement strategy is based on the same error measures, kind of like a numerical integration accuracy. We're looking at discretization error. At the end, they're identical. When you refine the grid to the end, we agree to 9 significant figures. They get the right answer both ways. It's just that the intermediate iterates are different. And the progress was different. Okay, so here's where we are. Here's my open questions. I said I was going to start with one question. I think I've answered that. Now I'm throwing out 4 more for you to chew on. I hope I've convinced you that you must look at the discretization error and see how that interacts with the optimization algorithm. If there's no other message I can leave you with, that's the one I want you to leave, want you to hear. I just show you an example where local solutions may exist because these are nonlinear problems, and that may have an impact on your overall strategy for solution. So you need to be aware of that when you're designing an algorithm. Whether we did it the best way or not, I'm not sure. It seems like an SQP algorithm can exploit a good guess. And it would also seem like a barrier algorithm is more appropriate as the problem size grows because it could exploit iterative linear algebra. So we kind of have 2 conflicting issues here. And that's kind of where I will leave it. I will open the floor for questions and comments.